You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from my apartment in Bedside, Brooklyn. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Kalen Carr, Charlie Davies, David Goss. Went down to the cellar tonight, boys, after this first night of the conference semifinals. Picked up a nice bottle of red, poured it up in Charlie's honor. And when I say cellar, I mean the cheapest table at the wine shop. This could be good. This could be bad. I don't have any idea, but I'm glad to be here.
You can't get
you
on Chuck D's level.
Andrew actually buys red wine vinegar from Trader Joe's and drinks it.
It's a bit strong, and I'm not feeling tipsy, more just sick to my stomach, but we're doing fine. Two big games on this night in the Eastern Conference. New England moving on. They continue to march on. Second straight road win for them. Orlando City, I wouldn't say almost imploded. They got really riled up in this one, but couldn't get the big moments in the end. Nani missing a PK, and the Revs DP is just too much. And then Columbus Crew outlasting Nashville in the late game. That's why we're coming to you right now. Of course, you might be watching or you might be listening either on the night of or a day later, depending on how you consume. We've been here every single night of the 2020 Adios MLS Cup playoffs post games. It's been a blast. We have two nights remaining. That's Tuesday and Wednesday out in the Western Conference. Seattle, Dallas on Tuesday on FS1, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. And on Wednesday, Sporting Kansas City and Minnesota also on FS1. At 9 p.m. Eastern. Before we dive in and really dissect and do some interviews, we have Matt Polster and TBD from the crew, depending on if we can talk to somebody in the moment. First impressions, and we'll start with you, Kalen, of tonight, of these two games, of what we are going to see in that Eastern Conference final, an old school matchup between the Revs and the crew.
Well, you've seen, you know, the top seeds go out before this. And then again, you just see a little bit of maybe a lack of experience in some ways where Nashville unable to get over the top. And then you see even in the first match, Orlando City, I thought were their own worst enemy in a lot of ways in a match against a New England side managed by Bruce Arena that knew how to get on top of things in the right margin, in the margins of the game. And Orlando let some of the emotions go against them and ended up losing their head and not being able to get through. And then credits to New England. They're priming at the right time. I think a better team than their position in the end of the table was. And then Columbus Crew. I think still, even though it wasn't a beautiful match for them, and at times it looked a little bit plodding and it wasn't as creative as they can be, they end up staying patient and taking their chance when they came. And so I think we're in for a really good matchup. And I think probably the two best teams that were left of the four today.
You had that little look, Charlie, talking about the Revs there. And I was, you know, do we eulogize Nashville SC right now? I mean, I don't want to give you like 5 minutes of airtime to jump.
You don't need to give it, Weeby. Charlie's
about it. That's right. He takes the space. Okay.
No, I give a ton of credit to Nashville, their supporters, the way they played, because it was a grind. They grinded out their way into the playoffs. They got the massive win against Toronto FC, which is great for their club culture. It's great for the supporters. It's great for the experience of the players and the front office. But I think at the end of the day, we saw a team that lacked ideas. And when you lack creativity, you lack ideas, and everyone understands how you play, in the end, it's not enough. And the Columbus Crew, a team that said, you know what? We're used to just pushing forward and being aggressive. We're at home. We're going to invite you to come into our half. We're going to make your center backs try and make the game. We're going to take Dax out of the buildup. We're going to force it to Anunga, or we're going to make Zimmerman try and beat us. They did that, and it worked out to perfection. So I give a ton of credit to Caleb Porter with his tactical game plan, and then a ton of credit to Bruce Arena for his tactical game plan, because it went exactly how they planned. They said, okay, Tejan Buchanan at right back, we're going to use him because now he's not going to track back. And we're going to force Kamal Miller to have to make a decision whether to take Carlos Hill, who comes naturally inside, and stay with him or stay out wide for Tajon Buchanan. He was caught in two minds most of the game. And Tajon Buchanan made both times when he was played in behind, he was able to hurt Orlando City, drawing the pen and then the eventual game-winning goal from Gustavo Bo that came off of the post from Books' shot. So I love what I saw from both coaches who won because they came with the right game plan, they executed, and they got the victory. It's kind of what I expected.
And they have the epic gif. I mean, that's what I'm thinking of right now is I'm thinking Caleb Porter with the Timbers doing that. I don't even know what the motion was. I don't think I explain the motion, what I think it was, and Bruce Arena turning around. Those are the Portland LA days. Those are a long time ago now. Things have shifted.
You never
forget.
Things
have changed. I never forget. That moment will just be burned deep inside of me. What's your quick thought on this night, Dave? When you think about what you watched and what stands out?
Well, I think one, coming into the playoffs outside of San Jose, if any team made it to MLS Cup, I wouldn't have been surprised. And the Revs are this close, and that's kind of what 2020's been. Bruce Arena spoke about it. It was a weird regular season. It was hard to really take everything from it. But you look at MLS teams in history, Andrew Farrell, an experienced MLS center back, and then two legit DPs who are controlling the game right now, and Carlos Hill, who can set the tempo at times as well. And for the Revs, if all of that's working, and Matt Turner, then the other players can kind of find and lose the game as they need to. Mm-hmm. Books has found it at times. Tajon found it today. Whatever. It's enough to keep you in a game until those players can get you over the top. They've done that. On the flip side from Columbus, Charlie, I disagree a little. The game plan was correct. The execution in possession was so poor from Columbus. It was so slow. And coming out of halftime, it didn't get better, which I was surprised by. But Columbus had more game match winners than Toronto did on the field 4 days ago. And eventually it was enough to break through.
Bruce Arena said this after their game. It's not an exact quote, but it's sort of a hodgepodge here of what he said. Everything distorted in the regular season. He wasn't too concerned about how the regular season went and where they finished. Didn't care. Fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh seed, eighth seed. Doesn't matter. Regular season competitively for him made no sense. Well, things are starting to make sense now. You're starting to see in these 90-minute sort of tests for these teams what they're made of. And form matters and injury matters, as we saw, by the way, tonight with Columbus. That could have really bit them. They have seven players not medically cleared to play. Their team spokesperson, Tim Miller, said they had seven positive COVID tests. So you can kind of like match those things up there, but they got through. Eloy Room was the big name that was missing. It's circumstance, it's performance, it's form. And then, as you said, Dave, it's match winners. Let's start with the late game. We are, at the end of this show, going to really dig into those two Western Conference games.
Ooh, the comment section is not going to be happy. There's heavy Revs love in the comment section. Are
they? Right now. Hey, that, you know what? This is even better.
Keep them reeled in.
We got you hooked in. You're staying with us. And if you're listening via podcast, yeah, you could skip ahead. But why would you want to do that? That's not that fun. Come on now. So Columbus, 2-0 winners. You saw the goals in extra time. They're one game away now, and Caleb Porter told us on the show, and we've repeated it over and over because it stuck with us in that way because it happened in MLS's back tournament, and it was this weird formative time. He said in that moment, Dave, he said, I don't even really care about this tournament in the sense of a trophy. It was about building a rhythm. It was about those three group stage games to make sure that if they had a chance to have home field advantage, that they would have home field advantage, and now they will play that game at home to see if they can get their way to MLS Cup. They were gutted by these not medically cleared to play issues. They didn't have Eloy Room, but they got the job done. What did this performance tell you about them, despite it being, and I agree with you, a little bit sluggish, a little bit lackadaisical, maybe because of what they were doing, but maybe just because Nashville is that good at taking away the center of the field?
Well, one of the things, and I think I picked Columbus second in the East coming into the year third, that I was impressed by was their depth. So you talk about those players unavailable. Luis Diaz, a DP that steps into the starting lineup for them. And Andrew Tarbell is an experienced MLS goalkeeper. So this is a team that could lose pieces and continue to put strong performances out there. And they're a group that, against a team like Nashville, they're happy to dominate possession. So they're never really going to give up opportunities. We saw Nashville against Toronto have spells of play, create opportunities, be dangerous. We saw it for about 5-10 minutes in the first half, and that was really it. Tip of the cap to Josh Williams. I thought he was awesome in breaking down every attack that came at him to stop transitions before they happen, because Cadiz tried to sit on his side and not really deal with Mensa, who's a lot more experienced of a defender than him. So I thought he played well. And then for Columbus, it was kind of, where are they going to create 1v1 opportunities? And they couldn't move the ball quick enough every time they switched to really get chances to break guys down. But it just kept coming and kept coming. and kept coming from them, and they'd overload zone 14 sometimes and start to knock it around, and they draw fouls, and Zellerayan had two or three free kicks from that area. And then Nashville would come in, and then they'd find Awful a bunch going down the right side, or Valenzuela coming down the left side. And they had half chances throughout the game. They know who they are as well as anyone in MLS. They know exactly how they want the ball to move, and they know exactly where their attack can come. And I thought they found gaps in Nashville, and we talked about it because we were all watching together. Around the 80th minute, I thought you started to see gaps. You saw more balls whipped in to areas Zardes could get to it. You saw openings between the fullbacks and the center backs. And then you saw when that happened and the back line dropped a little, Zellerayan started to find space behind Dax and Jones. And that's where Columbus was really able to find their success and eventually create the goal.
Jesse Zardes, a big part of both. Nice cut across for the goal from Pedro Santos. That got it started. Then he got his own goal. We were sitting there, Kaylin, and we're like, are you going to show the offside angle? Anybody can get the offside angle? In the end, we finally did see it. It looked like it was Daniel Lovitz holding him on. For all the shtick that Jossie Zardes has taken over the years, I mean, this is who he is now. He's a guy who changes matches both with the ball and also without the ball via his movement. I mean, this is an extra time. This is the difference between these two teams. You can rely on Jossie Zardes in these moments, and Nashville still doesn't quite have that player that they can rely on to score goals.
Yeah, I mean, he had the assist for the first one from getting in behind and then picks his head up and makes the right choice. And then once again here, you get the first touch, but this little second preparatory touch where he's not really rushed and just is reliable to finish those ones off. And Nashville, I mean, Columbus through much of the match looks stuck a little bit in second, third, if I'm being generous here, but it's not easy to play against a team like Nashville that seems pretty content to mainly get behind the ball, didn't keep a lot of it. And you know, you play in these matches and they can tell you, hey, press, like, one, take one touch instead of two. I was thinking of like the Thierry Henry thing where it's like not one or not two, one. And there weren't enough moments where Columbus were able to play one touch. It was two, three touch. And at times, especially with it's a gut player like Nagbe, he's almost more difficult to play against when you press against him. When you give him time and space, he seems pretty content to play and move. It's when he has to improvise that, you know, he's under high pressure situations that he ends up finding a moment of magic and then suddenly he finds himself bombing up the field. I just thought Columbus looked content, and you can understand in a lot of ways because they had a lot of the ball, you know, over, it was 55% possession, I believe, but I think it felt like a lot more. As far as quality possession and where that possession was on the field, it was mostly through the other half. And when they were able to exploit it was this one time where Walker Zimmerman challenges the header, makes the choice to go after the left back instead of going for it. And then the reactions from Nashville at this point were not as quick as Jossie. And credit to Jossie for getting to the end line and then making the right pass here, where in the past you say, oh, does he find it? But he threads the needle really nicely there. Pedro Santos ghosts in with the deep lying run, hits it to the back post. That's basically ball game from there. And then Jossie again stretches him in behind. So I thought this Columbus team looked comfortable. And when you look at the top end talent, best number nine in the Eastern Conference, Jossie Zardes. You look a line beneath. You got Zellerayan, Nagbe, and Artur, which for me is probably, you know, maybe Seattle has something to say about it, but maybe the best three in the middle in MLS. And then maybe one of the best center backs, Jonathan Mensah, as well. So no room, but I think still up the spine, that Columbus team, I was saying pregame, has a lot of that quality that ends up deciding games.
One of the things, guys, just real quick, that I find frustrating at times about Columbus, and we saw it in Portland under Caleb Porter as well, was sort of dogmatic at times of the way they play. And in a game like this, there was a play in the first half where Walker Zimmerman creates a transition moment and breaks himself and ends up in the box winning a header. And Andrew Tarbell gets the ball and holds it for like 15 seconds after that. The defender of the year is in the opposite box against a team where you're getting zero space and you don't just go quick. And that's one of the things about Columbus. They have Zardes they can go long to, but there are moments where you just want them to hit it long and press hard or counter press and just create a messy moment in the game to try and create an opening. And they have no intention to do it. And that's one of those things we've seen Seattle happy to do it over the last 3-4 years. Toronto able to do it at times, especially when Josie's at his fittest. And that's one of those things Columbus doesn't have. Now, the way the bracket's lined up, it may not matter in 2020, but it's one of the question marks about this group going forward.
Of course, when they had all their players, we saw what they were this year. Their style of play worked. And defensively, they
but
were
solid. But it's never going to work 100% of the
time. I agree. Right? And this is the time. This is the time to have that opportunity to say go. And I would have, against Nashville, to me, that's who you go because you're not that scared of what's coming back the other way. And that's no like, you know, I'm not trying to diss Nashville in any way here. But this game to me is, again, what they are. They have their 10 minutes where they're truly trying to press. And when they do create turnovers in dangerous areas, 3v3, they're pretty good. Mukhtar, Leal, Cadiz, they're starting to figure each other out. They're starting to understand where the movement comes from. And Mukhtar on the ball, I mean, he's a solo artist. He's beautiful. He can make people miss. But I just don't see from them, and I didn't see it in this game, and it's why they lost this game, an ability to build and to possess and to create chances. They can do it on set pieces, which they absolutely did. They had a couple in the first half that were like, my God, they're going to get one here. Like, these corners are coming thick and fast. Cadiz is jumping on the top of people. Walker Zimmerman is a monster. They're going to get their goal, and then they get set. But when it doesn't come, you know, Dax McCarty almost hit the post as well.
God, that Dax header would have been absurd.
The back heel actually from Walker Zimmerman, I was like, if that would have come off, I would have been here for it. But then it was, like you said, Dave, it was Walker Zimmerman being the guy to actually drive play and create chances himself. I mean, and that's just so bizarre to me to see. But when they actually got in possession, when they had a little bit of the play, they're just not precise enough in possession to create opportunities. Certainly not in the buildup, but not when the other team is sitting back as the Crew were and prepared for it, because they knew they didn't need to stretch themselves against this Nashville team. There was no point. And oh, by the way, they had the ball the whole time, so they can be organized. Nashville in this game, unlike that Toronto game, they didn't have those clear-cut chances. They didn't have the moments where you thought they're beating the door down, they're going to get there. They just didn't have that second gear to me. It was keep Columbus out of the middle of the field and let's just hope we get on the counterattack and somebody makes it happen. And this time around, Mukhtar wasn't going to do it. Cadiz didn't do it on the set pieces and Walker Zimmerman didn't have a moment of magic. And I've never counted on Leal to be that guy for them either. We'll talk about them a little bit more. Let's just look ahead for the Crew here now. Charlie, what do they do now? How should they think about the next week? Because they have until Sunday and another window to figure out what comes next, and they know who the opponent is now. It's the Revs.
Yeah, and for the Revolution, I think this is going to be one of those games where we really enjoy, because you have two teams who can possess the ball at times. They can sit back and counter. They can defend. They can be impactful on set pieces. I love this matchup because you have Carlos Gil and you have Lucas Elrayán, two of the best attacking midfielders in this league when it comes to their first touch and their awareness and being able to play these dangerous balls in a variety of different ways, whether it's driven, floated, curled. I love the fact that you have two midfielders who really dictate how the teams attack and how they generate their chances. You look at the goalkeeping position, I think from back to front, the Revolution are far better in the goalkeeping position because you have Tarbell coming in for Room. I think it'd be much, much closer if Room was in goal. But Andrew Turner, Matt Turner is playing at a phenomenal level with a massive save against Nani in the PK, has come in to really be the second best goalie in the U.S. men's national team pool right now under Zach Steffen. So I love the fact that you have a team that's kind of come from nowhere, but they always knew they had the quality. Bruce Arena said, you know, be patient. We haven't had Carlos Gil healthy for multiple games this year. He's still just getting back to full fitness. He's really showing you what he can do, but he can still take it up a whole nother level. Gustavo Bo, another player who had to kind of pick up the slack because of Carlos Gil's absence. We haven't really seen the best of him. Once he gets fit, really fit and in a rhythm, you see what he is capable of. He can finish all over the pitch, right foot, left foot. A really dynamic team when they attack. And Adam Buxa, who struggled all year, towards the end of the year, started to pick things up, getting into a rhythm because Carlos Gil gets back on the field. And all of a sudden, you're seeing what a capable striker for the Revolution can do when he's just relied on to hold up the ball and make good runs in the box, be it just a box player, nothing else. He's done that. He wins every ball in the air. Just a phenomenal jumper, well-timed in the air, and he's able to flick it on for Carlos Gil or Gustavo Bo. But I really like what they've been able to do. And then Columbus Crew today have just shown, like Kalen said, down the spine, very strong. I think they're going to need Tarbell to be at his very, very
bad. It's not going to be Tarbell, though, right? It's going to be Eli Room.
Who knows?
I know.
There's no way to know that.
That's true. Caleb Porter did say, and I look, this is all basically secondhand knowledge through somebody else. We don't know exactly what's happening, but he did say all seven of the guys were asymptomatic and recovering well. Depending on testing, you could see Eli Room back. I'm just saying, it is a possibility. Before we dig deeper into this, how do we remember Nashville's season? Because we're going to keep talking about Columbus. We got another show coming up. We've got a whole week to think about it. This is it for Nashville. This was a expansion season that started in what seemed sort of like a whimper with some of their moves. And there were some people out there, and I'll raise my hand on this, that were skeptical, and ended in conference semifinal. And if you would have offered conference semifinal at the beginning of the year, I think Gary Smith would have tore your arm off. He would have been like, yeah, I'll take it. Let's go. That's good. We need that. I mean, I think they're the first team since the Fire in 98 expansion team to win a playoff game. And how many expansion teams have come in that period of time? I mean, you're talking, it's more fingers.
That's another planet, man.
It's more fingers than I have on my hands. Yeah.
It's San Jose moved to Houston, then came back to San Jose.
Exactly.
Yeah. But the question is, where do they go next? What's the next level? What's the evolution of Nashville? Are we going to see more of the same next year? Or is there a plan to change the way they play to be a little bit more impactful or creative in the attacking half of the field? So that's what I'm curious. What is the plan?
How would they do that?
I would say you saw it at the end of the year. Hani Mukhtar had, I think, 3 goals and assists in the final month of the season, then comes into the playoffs, scores multiple goals. Randall Leal scores a goal against Miami. They got better offensively over the last 6 to 8 weeks, which is what you wanted. They brought in Cadiz in the summer. He slowly started to settle in. I don't think he played soccer for a year. So they got better cohesively. I think they got better individually in the attack. I've said it 100 times on this show. Look at the great attacking players in MLS and how long it took so many of them to get comfortable in this league. But at a minimum, they're in every game because of what they've already built defensively. And outside of maybe Dax and Godoy, who are a little bit older, so you're not sure exactly what you're going to get next year, everyone else along that back line is young enough to continue to perform at this level. So they have the strong base and they have talent in the attack. The question is it MLS Cup match winning talent? Is it being sent, you know, middle of the pack MLS talent? Whatever happens with Leal and Mukhtar and Cadiz is going to decide a lot of that. But the original question, what will this year be, is an incredible expansion year. And I think the moment against Toronto FC to go ahead on the road in the playoffs, everything they've been through against one of the giants of MLS in year one, that's what they're going to remember at the end of this year. That's what they're going to look back on. That's what they're going to run on the highlight reels. That is, to me, year one of Nashville SC in a nutshell was to be able to get that done.
I also think smacking into Miami, you know, because there were so many direct comparisons. And it might not be one we remember in the same way because it's not Toronto same, FC. I know. I get it. But to look across the aisle at your expansion partners who got all the publicity, and this is part of their narrative right now, Nashville's, and they're playing right into it. They're the ones sort of creating it. To look across the aisle and say, bop, we handed you the L. We proved what we are. And then to go on the next round and do it, I think is impressive. To me, it's about depth in the attack because they are not going to be a team. They've said it over and over. They're not going to go out and be, let's say, Inter Miami, where they go get a Gonzalo Higuain, or they go spend 10, 12 million on a guy, you know, from Argentina, a young player. They need more competition.
So how much money will they spend?
I don't know. Yeah. That's a question, but they need more.
The question is, will they go get themselves an Albert Feliz?
Yes.
Which is
exactly
big money, but not in the LAFC Atlanta territory. But if you put a player of that quality on the field with this team,
right,
that brings them to another level. So there's a ton of space to operate in between. Who am I allowed to say is the bottom of the league? Colorado in spending? Houston?
Sure. But
and Atlanta.
But spending money alone is not enough, right? I mean, look at the Galaxy. Look at Inter Miami. Look, like, they spent money. They broke, I think, a transfer record to get Walker Zimmerman. That's smart money to me. And then they go get Alistair Johnson from the draft, right? They go get Muil. They're getting guys at a bargain across MLS and proven talent. Dax McCarty, guys like that. So I'm actually feel a lot better about the base and the foundation of this team and the trust to understand that they're going to make the right choices to even go out into the market and get guys maybe at value, or maybe you splurge here and there. But let's just rewind this for a second. if you're going to say that the supporter shield matters and MLS Cup matters and all that stuff matters, making the playoffs matters. They get into the playoffs, and that first match was real. That was a real playoff match. Then you go against TFC, which, yes, I know they've had to go against a lot of difficult things this season, but that's a real playoff match, and they beat them as well. I just think these guys, they've won real playoff matches. They've won two teams. They've gotten through and have a lot to be proud of. Defied all of our expectations, I'm sure. And I think they have a really solid foundation to build off of, where they just need maybe one, two pieces to go from conference semifinals to conference finalists, or get back again next year. It was a really tough year to be an expansion team.
Yes.
And I think that they, by being prepared ahead of time, and even some of the moves they made throughout the season, was really impressive to see.
I am going to throw this out there because producer Anders tossed it into the chat. Caleb Porter said in the post game that the Crew did not touch a ball in the last week. Rewind it. Toronto FC had as tough of a season as anybody, and they're playing their home games in Connecticut. So yeah, you won on the road, but you won in Connecticut, and they can't sleep in their own beds for the large part. Inter Miami, we're missing their best player. We're missing Gonzalo Higuain because of the times that we are in. So I'm not discounting what Nashville did at all.
I'm pointing out
a few things that did go their way. There are breaks within this as well, and I do think that this season, in a way, their style of play was a break.
They missed the entire MLS's back turn.
From a culture point of view,
I'm just saying they could have disappeared
in July. There's a really good chance
that's fair.
That these players could have been like, I don't care. I don't belong here. None of us are a group. We don't know each other. This all failed, and just move on mentally. Yeah, and we've seen that in MLS a lot. From teams where players just give up.
Here's what they've already
overcome all of that.
I'm giving them all the credit in the world. I just think that replicating what they've done this year to next year is going to be harder than doing what they did this year.
Much, much harder.
That's just my opinion.
Yes.
I think that the league will be more difficult. I think so. And I think everybody will go out and they will make moves and improve. And you have to ask yourself, if you're Nashville, how you do that. Now, look, Baji didn't work out for them. David Akam did not work out for them. Those are the depth pieces that we were talking about that were supposed to compete and drive this attack. Daniel Rios can take a step forward. This is a ridiculous conversation. What do you mean? They're trying to be
better. You're naming two backup attackers who didn't work out. If you take every other expansion team, the top 17 players on the roster didn't work out. But here's this one guy off the bench who kind of hustled.
I'm talking about how conference semifinalists get better. If you want to hold them to a standard and say they did this, congratulations to them, then they don't just get to walk away and be like, doesn't matter what we do.
Okay, cool. Did we do the same thing with Inter Miami? Blaze Matuidi, did you watch his final
match? Yes, we dumped on him.
Did we go after Higuain? We
dumped on Inter Miami for two and a half months.
I've been dunking on Inter Miami.
I said, I've never bought into Inter Miami.
I just think it's a bit strange to go after David Akam, who hasn't played for three years.
I'm not going after him. I'm saying if they want to take another step forward in MLS in 2021, they have to have more competition at the attacking spots. Because right now, you can ride in Wheel, you can ride in Leal, you can ride in Cadiz, and you can ride in Mukhtar, and there's nobody behind him that you say can make a difference.
FC Cincinnati went out and got Jurgen Locadia, and it didn't matter.
Are we talking about FC Cincinnati right now?
We're talking about expansion builds.
Yeah, sure. We're talking about success.
We're talking about after this year.
But the success that Nashville has had, because they've had success to get into the playoffs to beat Miami and Toronto. Fantastic.
You guys didn't think they were good enough coming into the year. Then they go to the conference semifinal.
I'm the one who picked them to get to where they are today.
What are you going
to
do for me lately?
I picked them to get to where they are today and then lose, because ultimately, what got them here is not enough to get past the Columbus Crew on the road in the playoffs, which is exactly what happened. They didn't have creativity. They were too stuck in their ways of defending, looking for corners and set pieces, looking for the transition, the loss of a possession from one of the players in the midfield, whether it's Zellerayan or Nagby, and then going the other way. That didn't happen. Caleb Porter said, guess what? We're not losing off a restart today. It's not happening. We are not fouling anywhere around the box, although there were some times where they had opportunities. But we're not doing it. That was the game plan. And we're also going to make Nashville come out. Think that they can play with us. Because the last time Nashville came to Columbus, they actually played better. They deserved to win the game because they were attacking. They were generating more shots and chances. Although it came down to Pedro Santos and Zardes, who finished them off 2-0 just like today, just in a different manner. So I think for Nashville next year, they have to get better. And that's what I think Andrew Wiebe was saying.
Yeah, I'm not trying to drag them down. Like, what they've done is incredible.
You literally
they
just
should
rattled
be proud
off
of it.
How every team they beat was in a worse situation. And you were like,
I'm just, those are facts.
Them.
What, those are facts? What do you want me to do about that? Like, it was a fortunate circumstance for them in those situations. That's
devil's
just
advocate.
The way it is.
He's being the
it's okay.
Advocate.
I'm not trying to take it away from them, but you think Gary Smith's not looking across at Inter Miami and being like, well, you can't, you know, Gonzalo Higuain is out. Like, no big deal. That's a huge deal.
For sure. But Inter Miami should have won games and had more points that they didn't have to play in that game.
Okay.
In
fine,
the regular
but that's
season.
Not
I
the
also
situation.
Would say this. For a team that's trying to go Moneyball, to choose to rent out the real estate in Andrew Wiebe and Charlie Davies' heads this much, which are high markets, Boston and New York, that's expensive. This is very unorthodox for Nashville.
If,
but I respect
you know what?
You, yeah, you
know
don't
what?
Know how
it
much.
Might be a value buy. Might be a value.
Well, I might not be in New York that long, so it might
true.
Be cheaper rent than you
that's
thought.
True. My high sell
might be cheaper
low,
rent than you thought. Exactly. Look, I'm just saying, if they want to take the next step, there are ways to
but
do
the
that.
Fact that
every
we're talking about
Inter,
the fact that we're talking about Nashville taking the next step yeah. to the what is the next step? It's the conference final. It's MLS Cup. This is an expansion team, right? That was
yeah,
not
tell
none
that
of
to
the
Atlanta.
Expectations.
Tell that to
were,
Atlanta in
yeah, but this is not Atlanta. None
Atlanta
of the expectations.
Is. I'm just
look
saying,
at where they are.
Don't use that.
None of the expectations were that Nashville was going to be in the conference final or MLS Cup. So the fact that we're not just roundly celebrating their season is a miss. Yeah. That's just a miss. The fact that they even are where they are
we
in extra
that.
Time on the road against
we have
Columbus
celebrated.
That's
we
it.
Celebrated.
We did that. We can't ask what's next. That can't be a part of their conversation.
No,
I mean, it can
way
be
and more straightforward and realistic and obvious than most expansion teams we've seen over the last 10 years.
Fair. And I never said that. I literally said, go get a little bit of competition in your attacking spots for a team that had 10 open play goals in the regular season.
And then
that's
you
not,
drag them.
I'm not dragging them through the mud. I'm stating the obvious.
Their best attackers are Walker Zimmerman and Dax McCarty. That's all he's saying.
Well, Walker Zimmerman, I'll certainly say that. All right. We've really gone after that one. And maybe the comment section and the Revs fans are saying it. Come on. Come on, guys. Come on. You like keep the family business behind wraps here. All right. Let's get to Orlando, New England. All aboard Mad Max Fury Road in Orlando. These playoff games are they're a lot. Pedro Gaese was ready for it, though he wasn't planned. Sip and mate in his like nice leisure shirt there in Orlando. There was the red card from Risa Pereira that was just, I mean, out of his mind. What is he doing diving in that situation? You have Nani being absolutely wound up by Tejan Buchanan throughout the first half of this match. I mean, if we're talking about rent-free, like Tejan Buchanan was living inside Nani's head. Mm-hmm. And the Revs are up 2-0 within 30 minutes. And it's like, well, this is going to be easy as you like. And then all of a sudden, Orlando come roaring back. Kaylin, I think we've got you properly riled up as well here. As you've described now in the private chat, there's a firestorm. How did this game make you feel? Just give it to me emotionally, man.
Well, I'm just going to say I was just very disappointed in Orlando City, and I think that they let themselves down. And it just... this is a team that always plays right on the edge, and there's a part of that that really makes them special and makes them really tough to beat. And we've talked a lot about Poppy and his culture and the way that he's got this team believing and buying in, and that's been so special throughout the year. But I think the other side of that is a dark side. And we saw it in round one with Juan, where he lets the team down and gets, you know, tries to get one red card, then goes on and, you know, gets the next. And we saw it again today, where you go in at halftime and you're like, all right, we're down 2-0 against Bruce Arena. There's no chance you're ever going to come back. And there's just this crazy boneheaded play by Pereira to go at, I mean, Polster wants nothing to do with the ball this far up the field. He's got a nosebleed. He's just basically continuing with 30 minutes left in the match to essentially try and run out the clock and just waste a little bit of time, advance up the pitch, keep possession, and play it backwards. And you go in with the most rash challenge, totally uncharacteristic for Pereira, but a straight red, and the whole team loses their mind and surrounds the referee and says, how could we feel aggrieved by everything? And look, were they unlucky with Gayese not being here today? I think unlucky is probably the best word to describe it. But were they hard done? Absolutely not. If they were, they made themselves their own worst enemy, where if you tell me that they put that same energy towards a productive second half where they keep everybody on the pitch, which is a huge question. I mean, you almost felt like every Orlando match going into the match, the chance of them leaving the match with 11 men was low. Like, that's just how revved up they were. And what they needed more than anything was somebody to say, hey, calm down. That's a red card. It's a rash challenge. Let's move on. Let's go forward with the ball. And you know who I'm looking to in that position? Oh, European champion. Champions League champion, Nani. He was the one of anyone that was going the most crazy.
But he was jacked up from the first half.
He plays that way, right? And exactly. And this is exactly what I'm talking about, of being on that edge and being on that line, because there are times where we've seen in MLS's back where he's willing his teammates on and it's channeling into a really productive way, and he's a fighter and he wants everyone to bring the same. But there are times where that experience, I just kept waiting for that experience to come in and someone to be like, hey, we're in this. We're down 2-1. We're at home. We're in the heat. We've got the second half going. Let's push on and find a moment to win. And that moment just never came. And they were Orlando consistently in the playoffs were their own worst enemy and showed some inexperience in the wrong time. And when you're going against a rev side, you just felt like, okay, Gustavo Bo is going to hurt you at the end and just ice this match. That ended up happening. And that was it. But I just can't help but I wanted to see Orlando continue with everybody, because I felt like they could have gotten not only the equalizer, but potentially the winner. I think this team is good enough to do that. They bring on their depth pieces and they just never gave themselves a chance.
And Nani misses a PK too. I guess the right way to say that is Matt Turner saves a Nani PK, but that was an opportunity to go back 2-2. Didn't happen. Another one for him.
And once that was saved, it was over. Like, even because they went man down, then they drew the penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Once that ball gets saved, I don't think Orlando had another opportunity. Everyone knew that was your shot. That was your opportunity, and they just weren't going to get back in it. And to Kalen's point, it's a little upsetting. I would even say, though, I was frustrated with some of the soccer from them as well over the last 2 weeks. They were bad against NYCFC. They didn't deserve to win that game, but fine. It's a playoffs, single elimination. You grind it out. You do things. You know, whatever happened in the end of that, they get through. But they were better this week. DK was a little bit better. Chris Mueller was a little bit better. Nani was a little bit better. None of those three were even in the same ball field as what they were a month and a half to 2 months ago. And that was one of the things that killed them. And we talked a lot in the first 2-3 months about, well, Pereira can pull players around and create openings. And you look at a game where Scott Caldwell and Matt Polster starting in defensive midfield, and you think, this is an opportunity. Can Orlando own that part of the field? Can they create chances? And then you can either bring Mueller in there to attack or have one of them slip each other in between Nani and Mueller. And you just didn't see a lot of that. Most of the attack was, to Kalen's point, just like chaos. And it was like kind of what we saw last year whenever they were sort of good, when they would just throw like 13 players into the middle of the box and attack the ball. And DK did it a little and Mueller did a little. But that wasn't the soccer that they were playing coming into this run. This wasn't the team that went to the final in MLS's back. And they still have everyone. Guon's a miss, but they still have everyone else. And we just never saw the ideas or the confidence from them to play the soccer that they could to get to an MLS Cup.
Can I ask just this question? I know it's kind of a rewind here, and I know we've already gone in a little bit on the leadership aspect and sort of the calming side from Nani. And we saw that a little bit from Chris Mueller, who was like, guys, what is going on here right now? Like, yo, calm it down. Like, we crushed Blaise Matuidi for not tracking at all. Nani loses a very soft challenge against Tayshaun Buchanan that starts this whole thing off, that starts the revs. I mean, mm-hmm. It revs him up, so to speak.
He
literally puts himself on the ground, mm-hmm. and puts his head on his hands and watches as Tayshaun Buchanan runs the length of the field and creates a goal. And then spends the rest of the first half arguing with Alex Chilwitz about ticky-tack fouls in these different moments, while again, Tayshaun Buchanan comes down and draws a penalty with some neat footwork, and Uri Rossell loses his head and dives in for no reason. Like,
can I just say this off the front? Tayshaun Buchanan steps to Nani on that play, which no one in the world expects, right? Tayshaun Buchanan isn't a defender, but has the speed to keep up with Nani. No one saw that coming, and that's what created that goal.
Yep.
So I agree with you that Nani takes himself out of this game, and there was 15 other examples. But just on that one, I want to make sure we mention Tayshaun Buchanan's defensive instincts literally created a goal.
Yes, and I think what happened on Nani is we've talked about respect sometimes, Charlie, with players of mm-hmm. his ilk. I think Nani expects to get that call. And I think he thinks this is my, like, I should get that call. And when he doesn't get it, like, he's like, no, not again.
Kalen's reliving 2011 MLS Cup right now.
Too many times have I felt this, and he watches it go the other direction. But that's this game in a nutshell. The Revs have guys like Tejan Buchanan who stepped up, mm-hmm. and Orlando City have guys like Nani who did not in the moment. And I guess this is a good transition to the Revs while the comment section is just killing us for not talking about the Revs. Let's just start with Tejan, because it's been kind of this slow simmering conversation that we've had mm-hmm. about what's he going to be, what is mm-hmm. his ceiling, how good can he be, is he a winger, is he a right back as Bruce yeah. Arena has transitioned him into the playoffs. You have always been Team Tejan, 100%, Charlie.
Always.
So walk us through Charlie, moment from your perspective. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Moment one of Tejan Buchanan in your mind, sort of first impressions until this moment, his growth, his improvement, yes. and how he got here.
Actually, the first moment I realized, man, Tejan's got it, was at Sporting Kansas City. When they went there last year, or was it 2 years?
It was like the 5-5 game or whatever it was.
Yeah. He chopped someone and then played in a nice cross with his left foot, and they scored, and the Revs scored. I thought, okay, he showed just patience to allow the defender to really commit first, to chop him to his weaker left foot. And then he still played in a peach of a ball to find the striker in the box to get the goal. We've seen him now, this year, step up from the goal where he scored against the Philadelphia Union in the regular season, his first goal. And you started to see him grow from that. And it was the confidence, because throughout this year, you look at the first game of the year, there's a ball played in, back post, they're down a goal to Montreal Impact. He's in the 6-yard box and heads it off the post alone, no keeper. It's a gimme. For 99% of players, that's a gimme. Off the post, out. Typically, players, they bunker, done. Buried for the year. Hard to come back. He's always believed in himself. He has this confidence, this chip on his shoulder. He's not going to give up. And he's shown it in training. And all the Revs fans, they would watch him come into games, and he would struggle. He was moving too fast. He wasn't really able to kind of slow down in his mind, even though he's so quick and agile. And then it was the goal against the Philadelphia Union where it looked like it all settled down for him. He sees the field much clearer. He can see the game a couple steps ahead. He's not trying to catch up to it. And then the Revs fans were like, okay, we're not gonna say anything when he comes into the matches anymore. And he's just continued to get better and better and more comfortable. He could play on the right side, he could play on the left side, and now making the transition to right back, he still has an impact. And he's so good that Bruce Arena said, I can't not put him on the pitch. So I have to figure out a way to keep him on the field, even if it's at right back, to make it work. And he did. And he's still delivering. Although long-term, I see him as a right winger. He can play right back, but I think long-term, we're looking at a player who can really impact games and be a game changer for in Major League Soccer from minute one to minute 90.
Also, let's not bury the lead here. The kid's from Brampton. He's got to be good, right? He's from Brampton. Yeah, so you know he's a gamer. Go watch that episode of the movie.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if there's another one we can like link it into here.
No, the extra time Continental Award Brampton Player of the Year, otherwise known as the Canadian Player of the Year.
Exactly.
But we just go Brampton.
Well, and it is the D-Row, so I think it is kind of.
Yeah, true. I think it's Scarborough.
Charlie and I were talking, and Weeby, we were all talking pregame about that matchup with Nani on right back, and whether, you know, he play as sort of a wing back for one match, and then you're going up against Nani. But he handled himself, and I would say even for for not understanding, maybe having the experience, the nuance, the one that Nani gets so irate about early on, Tejan's running to the corner, and Nani's running down his back. He actually grabs Nani's shirt and then goes down, which is just a vet move. It was just a chef's kiss. Like,
yeah, and then he runs off when the foul's called. He runs off, no expression, which is the best part. Nani is melting down and Tejan's just like, hey, 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 internally, but not making any sort of sign that mm-hmm. he would feel that.
Yeah, and I'm sure we're going to get to Carlos Hill in a little bit, but for a player like Hill, you need dynamic players around him with movement, because Hill has all the magic and can spin and turn and play the right pass at every moment. But you have to have players with mobility around him that can stretch and drag defenders, because you know, whether it's Janssen or whoever, they have to actually guess, do I stay with Hill? Do I go with the overlapping run? That moment of pause, that just second pause right there is where Buchanan goes, and that's the perfectly weighted pass that gets him in for their second goal that ends up being the game winner. So Buchanan has really weaponized this right-hand flank. And yeah, you always knew he did the business defensively, but as well as in the attack, yeah. Drawing the penalty, just shifty, a little bit of the way we've seen Toronto use Richie Larea, another Canadian international, or I don't know if Buchanan, I guess he hasn't been capped yet, but he will be. but I think right back is actually a great spot for him. I might have to differ with you here a little bit, Chuck, just because he's got the ability as a winger, right? But where you're starting to see him separate is where you have this, you give him 10, 20 yeah. yards of pace ahead of time, and that becomes a really different problem for teams to solve. So I really like Buchanan. I expect to see, I mean, if you're Bruce, who's not one to just sort of throw it all up in the air and throw it out, you got to expect him to keep riding that out with him at right back.
We'll talk more about Bruce. We'll talk more about those DPs and Carlos Hill. Right now, though, I want to take a listen to the interview that we did with Matt Polster after this match. Touches on a lot of these topics. Take a listen. We'll be right back. Time now for an AT&T 5G call to the field. We're talking to Matt Polster of the New England Revolution of the conference finals. That one, somebody said in my Twitter mentions, Matt, was kind of like Mad Max Fury Road. A little bit of everything, some brawling, some bust ups, some big goals, some big moments. How did you experience that game?
Yeah, I mean, I think I want to go into the Philly game real quick. You know, we came in with that kind of mentality of wanting to bring that kind of intensity and show that fight and willingness to work for each other. And that's how we got through that Philly game. And then we try to bring that into the Orlando game. We knew it was going to be difficult with the weather and their intensity and how good they are on the ball. So we knew we were going to have to match that to at least get us in a position to win the game. And from there, we obviously had a lot of quality in the final third where, you know, I think Tejan played incredible today. I thought Carlos was great. I thought Gustavo was good. Adam was fighting up top the entire game. So when you have pieces like that are, firing, you're going to give yourself a good chance of winning.
So that is the collective side of this. Let's go into the personal side for you. You take a cleat in the back of the leg that looked pretty darn nasty. You are a part of a penalty that could have tied the game and didn't because Matt Turner stood there. Then after the game, the emotions of all you guys mobbing Matt Turner, just you emotionally in this game, are you sort of like on a come down now? Where are you at?
Yeah, I'm coming down a little bit, you know, obviously, like you said, giving up the penalty, I was like, man, I felt good that Turner was going to save it. You know, I think we have that kind of guy in the net where I'm like, there's a chance, right? There's definitely a chance where he's going to come up big for us. He always seems to do that. And even Scotty next to me was like, even if he scores, like, we're going to win this game. So I knew the guys around me that were giving me, you know, those things happen in games. Unfortunately, I was on the end of that, and I'm just glad Turner stepped up and my heart was racing. And then all of a sudden it's like, you can breathe a little bit, you know? And then from there, it was just trying to close out the game. So yeah, a roller coaster of emotions, but I'm just glad we came out here with the win.
As the team last week against Philly, you talked about it. You guys kind of came out, took out all the energy from the Union and were able to easily see it out. It wasn't like that this week. Orlando came back. They punched back. They kind of had you guys reeling. What was the conversation at halftime? What was the conversation on the field between the group to sort of readjust and keep the game going in the right direction?
Yeah, I think for the first bit, we knew the scoreline, they were going to come out and try and like put us under a lot of pressure. We knew that from the beginning of the game as well. But obviously being up 2-1 in a good position, we felt that they were going to come out in the first 10, 15 minutes and try and really get after us. And it's all about weathering the storm from there. And once we were able to kind of get them down to 10 men, which was unfortunate for them, lucky for us, we were able to see it out a little bit more. But I think the weather played a big factor for us, you know, the travel and then the weather. You could definitely see tired legs, and at that point it's just being mentally engaged, and I thought all the boys did a really good job doing that. So it was fantastic from the entire team.
How'd you deal with the emotional energy that Orlando were putting off? Because it was like team chaos out there. They were ramping things up. I thought you guys did a decent job of just kind of like blinking your eyes a couple of times and walking away.
Yeah. They are a very, you could tell they're an emotional team and they're there for their guys. And I think we were the same, you know. I think a couple of times Carlos got hit and we were on the referee trying to protect Carlos. So it's, you're always going to get that. Obviously they're going to protect them and we're going to protect ours. So we get it. It's all emotions and it's playoffs, right? So win or go home, and we wanted to win.
Next week, it'll either be Nashville or Columbus. We don't know yet. What does an Eastern Conference Finals mean for this team, and how far can you guys continue to go?
Yeah, kind of like the last my last conversation with the media. It's like, we're just, I mean, for us, I think we can go all the way. I truly believe we have the talent in the system, and we know our roles really well, and we're really defined now of what the staff wants from us. And I think you can see it on the pitch. Even though we didn't dominate this game, you could see there was a game plan behind it, and there was a really good understanding from the group what each person had to do to win today. And that's what it's going to take to win in the conference finals against whoever we have to play. And I feel confident that we can do that as well. So I think we can go the whole way, and we're just going to keep ride the wave. And I feel confident that we can win.
As Bruce Arena said, the regular season was distorted. There were some odd things going on. The scheduling was crazy. The one thing we didn't see or get to see with you guys was Carlos Hill. And I thought you had some good quotes this week about what he means for the team. Give me sort of the nitty gritty in the way that your life, your job, your duties on the field might change with him there, and what he gives you individually.
He gives you options, right? I mean, for me as a midfielder and whoever plays there, it's he picks up good positions on the field where if he has a chance to a second to receive the ball and turn, you know he can create something and he can break pressure for us really easily. And having that calming presence, I remember back in Chicago when we signed Bastian Schweinsteiger, it felt the same, where you know this guy is coming into the team and he's going to be able to control the game for you, break pressure for you, create chances for you. And Carlos is just like that for us. And he's immense for us, obviously. You can tell he defends as well. So he's doing everything that he can for the team. And we're all here to win, and we're going to each do our roles the best we can to get as far as we can go.
A few months ago, you were locked down in Europe. Then you choose to come back to MLS, get to New England. It was a long time to get on the field and all the things that have gone on. Can you believe that you're sitting here right now with this group going into an Eastern Conference Finals?
Yeah, I think from the beginning, it's hard to grasp where you are within the table and where you kind of stand, because obviously we've only played a handful of teams this year because of COVID. So it's tough to... We came here not really knowing Orlando and how they set up and their tendencies. We did as much film on them as possible. So it's difficult. Now we're going to go possibly play Columbus, who we haven't played, or Nashville, who we played, what, twice? So we're a little more familiar with Nashville, but again, we could go into a game not really knowing our opponent.
You will go on the road. We know that as the 8 seed, Nashville 7, of course, Columbus, I believe 3.
They love the road. The Revs love the road.
You got 2 straight on the road at this point. So where will you watch this game, Matt? Because it's in what? I'm looking at the clock here. It's only in 4 hours. You're on the road now. Can you get back to New England in time? Will you watch it on the plane? How does all this go down now?
I'm sure my wife is actually going to be recording it for me. She's pretty good at recording all the games that I possibly could miss, even the Premier League ones. So she's always on that for me. I'll be able to catch it at some point. I'll definitely take the time to watch that, especially if Columbus gets through. Obviously, I haven't really played them, so it'll be interesting. I'm excited to see who we play. I feel, like I said, I feel really confident with this group, and everybody's really positive and confident going as far as we can.
All right, man. On to the next one. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
All right, Revs crew, before we move on and shift out to the West, I do want to talk about the Revs just a little bit more, because I think what Bruce Arena said after this game, which is basically throughout the regular season, I mean, he made the point. He said they played Montreal and Philly like 11 times. I didn't go fact check him on that, but it feels true. You know, those things you're like, it seems like a fact. This was weird, a weird season. But this build was incredible, because we were on this show. I mean, I remember the late Brad Friedel years on this show.
And Brad Friedel year, I think, is correct.
Yeah, a year and a half. I guess years might have been a misnomer there. Like, we were very skeptical, and it turned out at the end that was rightfully placed. But immediately they spent money when Bruce got there. They go sign Gustavo Bow. And then he just starts getting the most out of guys that had been there. I mean, whether you're talking about Teal Bunbury or you're talking about Andrew Farrell or Caldwell, you go draft right and you bring in, like, you can't give him credit. for Matt Turner, but you can't give him credit for giving Matt Turner a lot of leash and helping him become the player that he's become. Those outside backs, those come through the super draft. You didn't even see Brandon Bye. He was a super draft pick as well. Matt Polster, they basically got on a flyer this summer, but it didn't work out for him at Rangers, and COVID was ravaging the world. And then it's Heal, it's Buxa. And all of a sudden you have a team that we're sitting here saying, and we're not, you know, we're not stretching it. That's arguably the best team in the Eastern Conference, despite what happened in the regular season. How did we get to this point, Charlie? And what have you seen again? Because you've seen it so closely in sort of the build that we thought might take 2 or 3 years, but ended up taking much less time.
Well, you'll hear all the players on the Revolution side say, it's the way Bruce Arena communicates with his players. He gives them the leash. We talk about the successful years in LA Galaxy when he was there, making players feel like they're in control of their destiny, giving them the leash. You're a professional. Just come to training prepared. I'm going to allow you to enjoy the freedom. Here's my game plan. I want the best 11 on the field. But ultimately, it's you guys make the game. I'm going to give you that freedom. I'm not going to bark over you guys, but these are the things I want us to focus on. And you go out and do it. When you have that from a coach as a player, you feel like, ah, things are good. I don't feel like I have chains on me. I don't feel this pressure. This, you know, you may have external pressure from whether it's a contract or your family, your supporters, but from your coach, you feel like you have belief. You have full belief under when you're playing for Bruce Arena. And all these guys, they've come together. This is a real family, and they've stuck together. And Carlos Heal at the center of it is a very humble individual. As good as he is, as talented as he is, he's always the first guy to try and win the ball back when they lose possession. He's always the first. And when he sets the tone, being as good as he is, there's no excuses for anyone else. And I think when you have certain players in the locker room, and that's what Bruce Arena prides himself on, is building a locker room full of culture, a team that is bought in. There's no bad eggs. There's no bad apples. And if you are bad, you're gone. So I think what Bruce Arena has done is, one, bring a locker room that wants to be together, that enjoy playing together, coming to training every day. Two, this is our identity. We have Carlos Heal, who is going to be kind of the centerpiece, who allows players to get into those places. He's going to find you when you're making a run in behind. He's clinical on set pieces, and he's just a good player. You want him on the ball. And then I'm going to put in those pieces around him to make him really shine and to make our team really come to take the field and play at their best. And you allow Tajon Buchanan, a young guy, to come in and have success because of the players around him. You allow a guy like DeJuan Jones to come in and play right back, left back, attacking right midfield or left midfield, a player who's very flexible because he's so athletic, but now he's also a gamer. He has creativity. We've seen him beat players 1v1. I think this is the player can ultimately be your long-term right back. And imagine having him as a right back and Tajon Buchanan as your right midfielder or attacking winger. That is a dynamic right side, a side you don't want to mess with. They can go from end line to end line, defending and attacking. And then you look at the goalkeeper position, Matt Turner, what he's been able to really turn into, to Kevin Hitchcock, who's come in as the goalkeeper coach from Chelsea, has really told him, hey, this is how you have success. If you want to play in the Premier League, if that's your goal, this is what you need to get there. And he's done that. He's worked tirelessly at that. Greg Berhalter said, you have all the characteristics to be a great goalkeeper, shot stopping, covering the ground, commanding the area. You need better feet. He's worked on that. Now you're seeing his distribution, his being calm on the ball. That's gotten better. And then I love the fact that whoever is plugged in with this system has really taken the opportunity. They've done well because they've been surrounded by players who want to make the most of this season. So kudos to the Revolution. Kudos to Bruce Arena. And that's what you get when you hire a coach of his stature.
Kaylin, I'm just wondering if you're slightly triggered by all the Bruce Arena praise and the building of a squad. I mean,
I'm doing the MLS Cup final.
That's true. That's a good point. Forgot.
Who hasn't?
The only reason Dave and I didn't is because we never played professional soccer.
How dare you?
That Bruce Arena left is long.
Yeah.
No, but it reminds me of a lot of those teams, right, where they find they find the De La Garza types. Mm-hmm. They find the Mike McGee's. They get the
Dave
right
Gargan.
People. Yeah, you get these pieces and look across the back line. It might be the cheapest back line in MLS. It's like Kessler, Jones, Buchanan. Is he GA still? Yeah. And Farrell? It's Farrell. Like, and you go in behind in net. It's like these are not, they're not spending their money there. They're spending big money on Carlos Heal, Buxa, and Bo, and they hit on every single last one of them, right? But then also, who shows up in a big moment is Buchanan throughout the playoffs, where I thought, you know, for Bruce, he doesn't try too many different things. He keeps it very simple. And to me, as much as we'd like to make this game as complicated as possible, mm-hmm. especially on the show, I think this sport is pretty simple still. And I would say the one thing that he took a little bit, and it sounded like he was trying it for a while, was Buchanan at right back. And I thought it was the one shift that's really made a difference between this team being dangerous, but really sort of up the middle. And really now they have some danger on the width from a verticality perspective. So I think that's been the one big shift, but Carlos Hill has been fantastic, and Bo is allowed to be him. He's before we saw throughout a lot of the season, him trying to do too much or getting in the wrong spots. And when you have Carlos Hill involved, you're just like, hey man, just lurk, just wait, pull up, shoot, just lurk. Yeah. You got Buksa attracting attention. And then you just see that the last pass from Bo to me was the most special, where you see the run coming from the outside, right? And Antonio Carlos begins to track the outside run, and he doesn't even really need to look him off, but it's such a special little 1-2 combination. But he makes the tougher of the two passes here, which is the one straight up the middle, and Carlos is looking, and by the time he turns his shoulder, it's too late. He takes one step the wrong direction, and Gustavo Bo does what he does, which is just to be hungry, make that little run, and then toe pokes it through Rose's legs. So
how many players can make that pass? There's not too many players.
Most people, I think, would pick that the outside pass, right? It's the most obvious one, but the quality shows where he makes the tougher of the two, and he uses one sort of thought of the pass to make the other. And you just felt like Bo, he didn't have to do much. He didn't have to be, you know, he could get his shots off. He could do his thing, but what they really need for him, and he's done it twice now in the playoffs, is to wait for the right moment near the end of a match when teams are tired, they let down a little bit, and that's where he makes you pay.
Yeah, and look, they didn't do this when he was being asked to run the game or be a bigger part of sort of the creative aspect. He doesn't need to be that guy. That is where Carlos Hill comes in, and he came back incredibly from this Achilles injury that we all, I think, assumed would take him out the entire year. Dave, do you have anything on the Revs, or can I throw Orlando to you since you push back on me so sharply when we talked about Nashville? Like, I'm curious where they're going to go, but I don't want to cut you off on the Revs if you have something you want to say.
No, I think we're going to talk about it. You know, the Revs are still in going forward, but it's fascinating to think what's next for the Revs, because all of this is sustainable. And Gustavo Bo will be 31 next year. Fine. Outside of that, everyone's south of 30. And when Kalen mentions how cheap the backline is and hitting in the super draft, that's when we see great MLS teams then be able to spend in positions where you normally wouldn't, right? To like spend big at defensive midfield because you saved so much on other positions. I mean, if they start two draft picks at wing or two draft picks at fullback, that just allows you to have an international spot to use somewhere else. And so that's what's fascinating. And I think one of the things that we talked about when it happened is Bruce Arena walks in the room with the Crafts and said, this is what we need to win. They trust him. And he's proven in his entire career, but especially in the last year and a half, that he's absolutely right. And so I believe that this is going to be a team we're going to be talking about around this round of the playoffs for a lot over the next 3-4 years.
We'll have the bigger conversation. It just sort of popped into my head about what like an MLS Cup win in this season would mean for the Revs as a club, because they are the ultimate almost MLS Cup team. Apologies, Chuck. Orlando, before we get to the Western Conference, and we got to get there because that's coming up on Tuesday and Wednesday. Quickly, what next for Orlando?
Everything they put together this year, especially at their best, but in general, are things that they're going to look to build on next year. What's huge is they have to get Antonio Carlos back. He was a massive part of their improvement, and he's on loan. So you hope you can maintain him. And Pedro Gallese, there was rumors late in the summer about him leaving. He kind of was in a weird situation in Peru and just needed a club, came here. Now I think we feel over the last week, he's clearly bought in and loves being there, and he's still getting called up to start for the national team. So it seems to be good enough. If you can hang on to those two players, I think that with Chris Mueller and DK and Benji Michelle and João Moutinho and Seba Mendes and Pereira, you have enough young players where you can say their improvement can make this team better. And remember, they already signed an experienced center forward who didn't play a single minute this year. His name escapes me. He's a 30-year-old Argentine who was supposed to be the starter. So they've already improved the attack without even doing anything.
And by the way, Dom Dwyer, I thought you were going to say Dom Dwyer. Dom Dwyer is sitting around here somewhere. I don't even know what his contract status is, but you got to imagine he's like, man, I wish I could be a part of this.
Yeah. So all the things are in place for them to be better next year, to continue to improve. Now, some of the issues that we saw towards the end of the season looked like Nani was a little overplayed or mentally he wasn't able to keep it going. Towards the end of the season, the inability for the young guys to perform in the postseason, and I think the style of this team falling off at the end, those are issues we've seen with Oscar Pereja teams in Dallas in the past. Sometimes it's injuries. Sometimes it was just the lack of the ability to keep that energy and maybe without rotation over the course of the year. So it'll be interesting to see what he does next because he changed so much this year. But my belief is that this Orlando team is good enough to continue to take steps without having to make drastic changes.
I was hoping you'd come a little stronger at them so I could be on the other side and be like, but Dave, it's their first season in the playoffs. You can't tear them down like that. But now we're going to move on. Seattle, Dallas, Tuesday,
Matias Ias. Abs, hit me up in the chat. That's the guy's name. There you go.
Bingo.
You're welcome, you filthy animals.
Bingo. Seattle, Dallas, FS1, 9:30 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. That's a replay from last year, which was incredible. One of the best playoff games we've seen in a long time. Where do we want to start on this one? Do we want to start with just like the basics? Is this Dallas team ready to summit what I'm calling Mount Sounders? They almost got there last time. Do we want to start with Brian Reynolds and Juventus, which came out of left field? Or do we want to ignore that? I don't think we can ignore that. Is it Ricardo Pepe or is it Pepe or is it Frank O'Hara? Is it Leerdam that's going to be in the lineup? Charlie, in your mind, where do you want to start this thing? Ooh. How do you think about
Charlie, it? Charlie, can I push you on one?
Push.
Frank O'Hara is a designated player. Ricardo Pepe's clearly performed better over the last 2 months. How can Lucci not start Pepe?
The only way you don't start him is because you say, oh, I'm going to bring him into the game. Yeah. I think I'm going to rely on experience here because this moment against one of the best, probably the best team right now in the Western Conference, I'm going to go with an older player who's experienced and not give it to the opportunity to a younger player who it might be he might feel the moment's too big for him to play from minute one. If I'm coach, I'm playing Ricardo. I'm playing Ricardo from minute one just because I feel like he gives you a little bit more. The athleticism covers a little bit more ground, and he's got that young spark, that energy that's contagious. There's no fear. He's just going to be, playing hard, playing with his heart, passion. I want that. That's something that you want to bottle up as every MLS coach and say, put this in every single one of my players. I want that spark. I want that energy. I want the appreciation of the moment. That's what you're going to get with Ricardo. And especially coming off a goal, like let it ride the hot hand, ride him into this match and test him. Say him, go out. I believe in you. You've made it to this moment. Now you're ready for this opportunity.
But isn't that sort of the question for Lucci? Whether or not they go for it from the start or they stay a little bit more conservative. And I heard you, I could hear a Kalen Carr response in my head as Charlie was saying that, which is in the playoffs, be a little bit more pragmatic, understand that the game will probably be decided in the last 20 minutes and get your fresh legs on then and use Frank O'Hara as sort of like your warm up.
Yep. I'm going the exact opposite, Weeby. The exact opposite because this is not that team. And if you sit back and you want to wait and you want to play conservative against the Sounders, I think you're waiting to die. I think you will just get run over. And I'm not saying you go completely all out and go crazy, but I think this Dallas team, we saw last year, they went up to Seattle, similar situation, and they didn't sit back. They didn't just wait to sort of absorb and try and hit on the counterattack. So I'm with Charlie 100% here. I think you start Pepe and I think you start Tessman as well. Yeah. Watching both of those guys come in the match, they changed the match. They didn't look overawed. In fact, I think it would give a bounce to the team to see those guys come in from the beginning. And the philosophy of the club overall is about playing young guys and trusting young players. And I asked Lucci last year about when is the chance to play when Ricardo Pepe, by the way, was scoring two goals in the semifinals of the North Texas USL game of like, how do you know when it's time to give a young player a chance? And he was very honest. And he said, you don't know. You just decide that it's time to try. And they've decided consistently as a club to try. And it's consistently paying dividends, whether that's in the transfer market or on the pitch. And I saw both these guys come in and show that they were ready to go. So I say, if you're going to go with this philosophy,
preach.
Go from the start. I want to see both these guys.
I agree.
So don't ever, you know, think that I'm.
Yeah, this old fool. You ripped it out, man. All my accumulated Kalen knowledge, I'm questioning it right now. I don't know what to think.
I agree with Kalen, and I think you start those guys. I think the emotional boost to the team takes you a level anyway. Just saying, these guys earn the time, and I think for players, you want to see that they get the opportunity and the production from Ricardo Pepi, but they do have to sit back in this game. Because Seattle struggles to break down a low block and LAFC opened up and tried to create chances and you give Jordan Morris space. Charlie, you're going to open up
and you're going to play on the front foot
in Seattle?
No, but I'm telling you, you don't just sit back. There's got to be a balance. I think if you get the balance right, because we saw last year, you can attack and you can get after Seattle. Don't act like Seattle's back line is the most brilliant back line of all time. They're not going to be conceding goals. They concede goals. You just have to push the buttons at the right time.
Yeah,
and for FC Dallas, they know, okay, we can score goals against the Seattle side.
What are the buttons?
Well, Seattle, they come, right? They come in waves. When Leerdam comes up and he's making those overlapping runs and he's getting involved, guess what? That's a channel wide open.
So you're talking outside backs, and that's maybe where Dallas have...
Even in behind. Maybe just the in best. Behind.
Or just push it in behind.
In behind, use the outside backs, use the width, but test them. You need to play balls in behind the back line. Have them face their own goal. That's when Seattle is very vulnerable because you know what you're going to get with their front three. You know when Ladero's on the ball, he's like Carlos Gil, who's done it, but Ladero has done it for much more years and with much more consistency in Major League Soccer. But he gets on the ball side to side. He can pick you apart by playing those penetrating balls to Rui Diaz or to Jordan Morris, who's making a run in behind from left to right or right to inside in behind the center backs. He's just that good of a player. Do not allow them to just sit back and allow Ladero to kind of just dictate the game and pick you apart. It's got to be, okay, we sit, but then let's be aggressive. Let's push. As soon as that ball goes back, we're moving our lines higher up the field. And I think once you get that balance right, and Lucio Gonzalez talked about it, hey, we scored goals. We can beat the Seattle team, but we can't just be reckless.
And that's another reason to go for a young with a young team, because if you're going against a veteran team, you go with young, energetic players that can cause problems. When you look at even Seattle versus Dallas years ago, before Seattle had homegrown players and Jordan Morris and all those guys, that's how Dallas upset Seattle and then made Seattle really rethink about how do we get younger and get a little bit more dynamic. So I think you go again with the youth, you get all over the pitch, you make it hard for Seattle, and you try and upset them.
I'm looking forward to it. We'll be here again after that game, after this 9:30 p.m. Eastern game on Tuesday, Seattle-Dallas on FS1. Before we get to Sporting KC Minnesota, and we are going to go a little long here, I'm guessing in the playoffs you're not going to mind. Here's a statement from Producent Anders. Sounders not in MLS Cup? Failure, period. The punctuation is very important in this case. Do we agree with that at this point for the Sounders? That's how reductive it is for them in this particular moment? And also, can I just start out there that it's so bizarre that Brian Schmetzer is doing all this without a contract for 2021? It still remains crazy to me and weird, but I guess it's just the state of the world. So if they don't make it to MLS Cup, is that a failure? Period?
The way that
I think if they don't win MLS Cup, it's a failure.
Yeah. Yes. One up it. Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, just by their own standards. I mean, that's what they've sort of proven at this point. And I think they have a really good pathway to get there when you look across, you know, the way their form is and when you look at how the field is right now. I know Anders is jacked and trying to create something out of here, but I would say the standard overall has been kind of set for that.
He's trying to say, basically put Seattle on this pedestal. Like they are, you know, the Barcelona in their prime with Messi and Guardiola, and they're winning everything. He's saying, if we don't win, it's always a failure. That's what the precedent he's trying to set right now.
They feel a little more like Real Madrid to me.
Charlie.
I don't think they don't feel that much like Barca. It's more like Real Madrid.
Time out. If they do win this year, Mm-hmm. And it's 3 MLS Cups in 5 years and 4 finals in 5 years.
Yeah.
We're talking about LA Galaxy Dynasty. We're talking about this United Dynasty.
I agree. Okay.
I'm just making sure.
But what I'm saying is it's not a failure if they don't win MLS Cup. I think you're still having a successful season if you get to the Western Conference Championship and you lose a tight one. I think
maybe, but also, Charlie, you think they're favorites against SKC, right?
Yes.
And you think they're favorites against Minnesota?
So that would mean they'd lose
to a team that you don't expect them to.
Right. But I wouldn't say their season is a failure if they lose in the Western Conference Championship.
There's your YouTube headline, Charlie Davies, Seattle is a failure.
I think they're going to get that West Cup. Get out of here with that.
All right, Sporting KC fans are sitting here saying, God, you guys never give us any respect because that's what the mailbag says. I mean, we got like an essay.
We got an essay.
Nine pages.
Weeby's family.
Read the whole thing.
Might be. I don't know
if Joel Weeby writing articles now.
I got to tell you, if he's listening right now, I'm not betting on my brother to be writing many essays that he doesn't have to. I'm just throwing it out there.
All your friends, though.
Sporting KC, Minnesota, FS1, 9 p.m. Eastern. We don't know if Alan Pulido is going to be back for this match. 3 weeks ago, it was that he would be back from that sprained knee in 3 to 4 weeks. That says to me he will not be back and probably would not be back, certainly as a starter, should they advance to the Western Conference Final. That this is probably more of a like MLS Cup long play sort of deal, but we shall see what happens. Maybe Peter Vermees and Sporting KC are holding those cards a little bit close. Sporting KC have proved that they can create, they can score without Pulido. They are much better with him. The flip side is Minnesota. Too forward or not too forward for Adrian Heath? Kai Kamara did not start. Adrian Heath seems like the sort of manager, to me, who gets forwards and decides like within 6 months to a year that it's not the right guy. Actually, no, not the forward that we need. We got to move on. Like, as you said, Dave, he's now come full circle 3 years style, and Christian Ramirez is now saying that might actually be the forward. What would you guys do, or what do you think Heath will do with the forward position? Do you play that sort of false nine? Do you let Robin Ludd and you know, Hot Boy and Reynoso run the game and sort of create from those positions? Or do you bring Kai back into this team?
I think for this game, I think Adrian Heath will bring Kai back in, but I agree with the idea anyway, because you just want to push those center backs and you want to make life difficult for them. You want to have a constant threat for them, and Kai can do it in transition if that's what's necessary. But I also think him coming back, if he lays it off for Molina or Lode or Finley, that's where Minnesota's at their best, is combinations in transition to launch Molino down that left side. And you expect to bring Roman Mentaner back in this game because he wasn't able to get back for the last game. So now you've got that verticality down the right side to stretch the field. I think Kai makes sense for a game like this. And I also think that's the way Adrian Heath sees the team and sees the game. And going on the road against a team that's favorites but does struggle at center back, I'd expect to see Kai there.
By the way, Kai would probably be furious if he was not in this team against his former team in Kansas City.
Oh, Weeby, unfortunately, you could say that most weeks against Kai.
Yeah, I'm generally against changing the lineup, especially after, you know, a playoff win. And I would say Minnesota looked more dynamic than they have in the past without a nine. Mm. But on the road against Sporting Kansas City, you need somebody that can be a release valve and to be able to get out of pressure, hold up play, bring players in. And Kai can do that. And then you also look on set pieces and what a factor he can be on that. So I know it hasn't completely clicked with Kai in Minnesota as of yet, but I also think there is a little bit of that human factor as well too, where you kind of want a player who's going against his former side, and you want a player that's like going to be up for it. And there's no doubt that Kai would be, you know, Kai's got a bunch of former teams at this point, but Sporting Kansas City feels like the sort of emotional core in a lot of way of Kai and you know, his fandom and the way people love him in that city. So I think he'd be extra motivated. And I think for a guy that's constantly searching for pushing motivational buttons in Adrian Heath, you go right away to Kai, I think, this week, and you say, hey, you're our nine today. Take us to the next round.
Where do you want to go, Charlie, in this game? I'll throw some options at you. Mm-hmm. You could go with Sporting Kansas City, and I know you've I don't know if critical is the right word. You've certainly been critical of me, but I don't know if about the team. Or you could go with Minnesota and double down there, because we haven't really talked about Bebelo Reynoso that much. Like, we've praised him, certainly, but this guy has, I mean, he's basically creating more than a goal a game at this point. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't gotten maybe the hype that he would have otherwise. Like, the hype that we would have given somebody in, let's just be honest, a bigger market, a place that's not the Twin Cities, yada yada.
Mm-hmm.
What are you feeling?
Well, I look at these two teams, and Sporting Kansas City for me have really been poor defensively, and it showed against San Jose Earthquakes. Pumchech and Reed, that combination at center back, they gave too much space. They made too many mistakes. Chris Wondolowski got that goal because of the poor marking. And San Jose scored three goals on the road, and this San Jose team was not really playing to the best of their ability. So, again, it comes down to how Sporting Kansas City are playing. Are they on the front for their attacking? Are they being aggressive? Because they can hurt you that way. Because I really loved what I saw from Espinoza and Busio, their partnership, how they work together in the center of the midfield. With Shelton stretching, Johnny Russell and Gerso, all three of those players can hurt you with pace. They can get in behind. They can create. And then you look at Minnesota, and they've built a backbone on being defensively sound. And Boxall and DeBassi, that's been a good pairing. DeBassi's really athletic. He can cover. Boxall is cerebral. He reads the game well, physical. Hassani Dotson, a great right back, another player who can come in and play midfield. If
who should play central midfield in this game.
Yes, I agree.
There's back.
Robin Lode, for me, is not going to be the difference maker for Minnesota if he's starting up top. I think you do play Kai Kamara, and you play Robin Lode, you play Molino, and you play Reynoso, and you have Finley come off the bench, because Finley is one-dimensional. So I think when you have Robin Lode, he can come inside, he can go down the line, you can play him on the right, and he'll come inside on his left. Molino and Bebe Reynoso have been phenomenal. So all in all, Minnesota has probably the most structured and compact team and complete team. But if Alan Pulido is in the side, that really gives Sporting Kansas City the edge, because they have that real difference maker, similar to Reynoso, but more of a finisher. So I have Sporting Kansas City beating Minnesota in this match, because I do believe playing at home, they can get the job done, because Minnesota at times is too hesitant. But we'll see.
We shall see. Tuesday, Wednesday, the Western Conference semifinals, Seattle-Dallas, FS1 at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. Then on Wednesday, Sporting Kansas City-Minnesota, FS1 at 9 p.m. Eastern. Word is that we got to wrap it up here. We could do this forever, but I think we got to sleep as well. We'll see y'all on Tuesday afterwards. If you're listening via podcast, thank you so much for doing so. Please subscribe if you haven't already. Leave us a nice review or a funny one, or, you know, whatever you want to say.
Write an essay.
Shout out to the Midnight Riders in the comment section. Get a knish for me.
Hey, I was going to say, they've been asking you what you're going to get from the deli, from the deli for a while now. I mean, it's been multiple streams.
Yeah.
So enjoy the playoff action. We got more to come Tuesday, Wednesday, just one game. We'll be here afterwards as well. So tune in on all the MLS channels. We'll see you later this week, everybody.